Nature writing. Australians have been telling stories about country for thousands of years, haven't they? And the more recent waves of arrivals, I guess over the past two centuries, have produced a very rich tradition of writing as Europeans tried to make sense of this new world which surrounded them and which gave their lives meaning. Well, the Australian chapter of the international environmental organisation Nature Conservancy offers an annual prize for nature writing. Geordie Williamson was the judge of the last competition in 2012, so it's not annual, it's every 2 years. He's the literary critic of the Australian newspaper and a published author, and you've got to know his voice very well on this program, and he joins us by Skype this morning. Welcome to the show.
Morning, Michael.
Is that right, every 2 years?
Yes, I believe so.
Mm. So let's establish what we're talking about here. What do you think nature writing is? Because we're not just talking about bucolic tales of bubbling brooks and butterflies and so on.
That's been the kind of ossified sense that people have in their mind, and it was sort of that tradition of English clergymen polishing, you know, dove eggs. The story goes that Stella Gibbons' Cold Comfort Farm, published in the early decades of the 20th century, was so savage a satire of this particular tradition that nobody dared write in it for decades afterwards. But I think what we're seeing in recent years is a resurgence in nature writing, and not in a kind of polite genteel tradition, but in a rather more ecologically urgent one, a tradition that asks us to attend to the natural world at a moment where it may well be that it's slipping away from us.
So it might be rapture, but it's rapture with a kind of political context to it.
Yes, I mean, it's not necessarily always overt, but I do get the feeling that it is, even when it is wholly directed towards the natural world, there is underlying that a kind of anxiety. And I think all of us now who are kind of sentient, rational beings tend to look at the weather and look around us and think a lot harder about what it means to be in a particular place and how we might situate ourselves in it in a way that is that accommodates its difference, that we feel at home, that we feel unthreatened by it, which it gets harder and harder all the time, I think.
Now, I've never been asked to judge this prize, and I don't know that I'd say yes, because I just cannot imagine how you go about the task of judging a competition or a prize for nature writing. How do you think your way into this, Geordie?
It's a bit tricky. I think you're right to think, you know, that there might be a lot of, bad romanticism. Hello, trees. Hello, clouds. But I have to say, my experience of judging the prize was that the best writing going on today is actually nature writing. And I say this after a few years of judging the Vogel and reading a lot of emerging novelists and feeling that they haven't quite got it right. And I think it's not that they're bad writers. It's that the novel as a form is not necessarily the most ideal one for Australians. And I think that what the those who are doing really good work for prizes such as this one are, they have established some sense of Australian literature which operates outside of strict genres that have been laid down for us, essentially, in an Anglosphere tradition, from other countries with other traditions.
Geordie, that's a fascinating proposition. What is it about the novel that's not a good fit for Aussies?
Well, I mean, you look at it this way. Say, let's look at the 19th century English novel. Let's look at Trollope. Now, those wonderful books rely on strict class systems, hermetically sealed social structures. They rely on dense social populations, small towns not far from one another, and so on and so forth. So the 19th century realist novel really emerges out of a particular set of, you know, geographic and social circumstances. What happened in Australia was we had a fair crack at the novel. And I think it's fair to say that when you go back and you look at our early novelistic tradition, it's fairly staid and it feels odd. It feels like an imposition of that model over a landscape which doesn't really support it. So what happened, I think, is that amongst Australian writers, and I think we can look to people like Miles Franklin, we can look to Joseph Furphy and that wonderful Such Is Life, and then we look to someone like Xavier Herbert and Capricornia, whom Geoffrey Dutton, that sort of, you know, very serious mid-century critic, said was the first Australian novel to exceed the bounds of novelistic realism. And I think what happened there was Herbert went to the top end. He'd been reading Dickens on the train on the way up, and he allowed the febrile tropical environment to shape the way he responded. So for the first time, Australian literature was listening to the landscape rather than trying to impose an Anglosphere version upon it.
So are you saying that the traditional novel with its tightly structured story works best if there's a sort of emotional or even geographical claustrophobia, a kind of pressure of place and proximity of people working on it, and that in the openness of Australia, a different kind of writing has presented itself? Because it strikes me, with Such As Life and with Xavier Herbert, you pay a cost for the exuberance and energy of those writings, and that is that story and coherence kind of go out the window. They're much more difficult books to read because continuity...
Yeah, no, look, I take your point, but I think in a sense what we're both admitting is that our training has been in a tradition from which Australian literature is seen to be a kind of declination, to be a kind of departure from the ideal norm. And I think that when we look around the world, and I know that you're going to do the Subcontinental Book Club next year, I mean, look at those books. They don't apologise for the fact that their books are different, that there is a kind of marvellous excess about them. And I think our problem has not been that our books are challenging or different, is we just haven't learned to look at them with a fonder eye. And I think that's been part of my project as a critic over the past few years, is to try and say, you know what, you have to read it differently, of course, but once you get your eye in, it's beautiful. It's just as beautiful as any other literary undertaking on earth.
Well, I totally agree with you. You know, when we've done Australian classics as our book club here, and I've done them for 3 years, both here at Books and Arts and before that on Bush Telly, and you go back to the books that you know are the Australian classics and read them with an eye to celebrating their qualities, and you do find that I found that I was actually astonished by just how good, you know, say the Merry-Go-Round in the Sea is.
Oh, well, that's wonderful. And Stowe is, of course, one of our great poets of place. So I think that there is something to be said for a willingness to entertain difference. And I think that we're getting much better at it. We don't demand of our novels that they somehow adhere to, I think, a fairly old-fashioned and rigid model. And I think what's been fantastic for us is two streams, both the rise of Indigenous Australian writing and the arrival of writers in English or other languages from elsewhere who share our kind of post-colonial experience, but have been able to open a window onto a different way of seeing the world. So I think from the get-go, Australia has never been a great match with English literature per se. And when we go back to look at someone like Patrick White, what do we know about White? He studied Northern European literature at university. He was a great Germanic scholar of books. I mean, an amateur scholar, but a scholar nonetheless. And it was that tradition, the tradition that begins with those extraordinary journals by Ludwig Leichhardt, that actually shapes our literature differently and along lines that aren't parallel to the Anglosphere tradition.
And the great paradox in Wright is that on the one hand, he feels as though he's a very traditional writer in the high literary style, but there is also in Wright this kind of almost avant-garde Dadaist impulse, which comes out most strongly in his theatre.
Absolutely. I think if you speak to those people who know Wright's work really well, they'll say there's an element of the grotesque in his work, which has its echo in the kind of wounded romanticism of the early explorers, who were all tended to be sons of the European bourgeoisie. They'd been raised on the romantic poets of the 19th century, and they looked to the landscape to respond to them in the same way that the Swiss Alps might, and it didn't happen like that. And their sort of wounded response, I think, marked Australia Australian literature for a long time. So part of our story has been learning to overcome an initial fear or disdain for what we found around us because it did not accord with traditional ideas of beauty and order. And coming to terms with that has been an exciting act of, I think, understanding indigeneity for ourselves, to try and enter into the worldview of those who inhabited this continent for tens of thousands of years before we came.
I wonder, Geordie, if that means that Voss is a novel which we really have to get beyond, because increasingly I find Voss a kind of disturbing book, because it is ultimately about the way in which the land is so alienating that its moral is the only way to become part of this country is to allow yourself to be annihilated by it. And I've come to a point
I
where I just
you
can't...
raise a really serious point, and what I'd like to think about White is that he was the frontiersman who went out and sort of had to do the terrible work of clearing and fencing and this in an imaginative sense. It's the only kind of appropriation that I think is okay to do it in your mind. But he cleared the land. And then after him, you think about the two really significant figures in post-White in our literature, and that's Randolph Stowe and David Malouf, in my view at least. And the poetry of their writing is much gentler, less savage. And I think that that is because they were able, after that initial effort, which was so hard, to find some softer, gentler beauty in the land which they found themselves.
Yes, and a less troubled sense of just belonging.
Absolutely. Well, with Malouf, I think you have the first moment where, you know, an Australian writer has said, you know, there is an entirely different way of inhabiting this space. And I think it is much closer to an Indigenous perception of Australian space.
Sorry, Geordie, to step away from fiction for a moment, another book that really seems important to me in our own era is Eric Rolls' book, the 1981 book A Million Wild Acres, which has that incredible sense of empathy and belonging.
I think that Eric Rolls is a really significant figure because he's a farmer and he's a poet and he's an historian. Farmers tend to look at the world differently to the ecologist. They have a practical interaction with the land. And if what we're beginning to understand via people like Rolls and like Bill Gammage, that this country was not untenanted, but was very much shaped by human hand over countless generations, then the farmer, with their practical sense of engagement with the land, has a way into understanding environment that maybe others do not. And what Rolls reminds us, I think, is that the places that we don't see, because most of us live on the coast, in the suburbs, and our sense of place and the inland tends to be mediated by, sort of television or advertising, that those places outside of our own immediate geographic knowledge are storied and they're peopled, and they are not just empty spaces to be despoiled or enclosed or sold off. And I think that there's something intrinsically valuable about just telling stories of place as a way of protecting them from those who would otherwise just like you to just go about your business and be a good shopper while we go and dig it up.
Well, the idea of heroic engineering or heroic mining as the process that brings story and purpose to the land is vested in this notion that before, the land was somehow inert, it was timeless, it was without story. Whereas if you read, as you say, Bill Gammage's book, The Biggest Estate on Earth, it gets over this idea that even nature writing should be timeless. Nature writing is a story, it is a process of change, it is a process of human interaction with the wider world.
Well, exactly. And Eric Rolls' story in A Million Wild Acres is about the first European forest on the continent. So we're not in aspic either. We have shaped this continent in all sorts of ways. So we're all embedded in this process together. And it behooves us to actually be very mindful, be alert, because we can't know the entire continent. It is vast. But as a concerned citizen or as someone who loves to read, I think there's something just inherently valuable in coming to know your own place through the writings of those who know it intimately.
Geordie, you should write a book about this. I mean, really, this has been the most extraordinary conversation. I feel as though there's this thesis taking shape in your mind, which is still a little bit out of reach for both of us, but you've almost nailed something really marvellous here this morning.
Well, Michael, my next book is about Easter Island and my Scottish forebears leased Easter Island from the Chilean government for 50 years in the second half, well, the latter parts of the 19th and the first parts of the 20th century. So I'm particularly interested in the way that, Anglosphere farmers came and affected the ecosystems they entered into. So, yes, I think it happened all over the world, and there are echoes of what we've done all over this continent, but, even in a tiny island microcosm, you can see the same effects.
Fantastic to talk to you, Geordie, as always.
All right, great. Thanks, Michael.
Geordie Williamson is the literary editor of The Australian, and The Nature Conservancy, Australian Nature Writing Competition, which we sort of were talking about. I mean, anyway, I hope we've whetted your appetite for nature writing. This competition closes on December the 24th. That's Christmas Eve. And it's perhaps a way of stepping back a little from the Christmas shopping frenzy and connecting back with your sense of place. And the winning essay will be published in the Australian Book Review. And there's a prize. And you can find the details of this whole exercise on our website. Just go to Books and Arts Daily here at RN.